Can't Wait for Christmas is a proud member of the Christmas Podcast Network.
Hey, buddy, what you doing?
Is it Christmas yet?
No, sorry, not yet.
I can't wait for Christmas.
Yeah, I can't wait for Christmas either. In fact, let's celebrate now.
Welcome to the Can't Wait for Christmas podcast.
It's June 25th, 2024, and that means there's 6 months left until Christmas. Today on the show, we're really gonna blow things up as I expend a lot of hot air talking about Christmas inflatables. I've also got a mea culpa, which includes a tip for you about how to enjoy Christmas via the lens of foreign films. We've got the return of Who Sang It Best, and Jeff from the Lost Christmas Podcast joins us to give us his five golden things. Okay, let's start the show! Welcome, Yule Believers, to the Can't Wait for Christmas podcast, the podcast all about Christmas history, Christmas traditions, Christmas media, and everything else Christmas. I'm your host and Leon Day celebrator, Tim Babb. Yes, today is June 25th, a.k.a. Leon Day, a.k.a. halfway to Christmas. So, as is tradition, all rise for the official Leon Day anthems! Yes, when the summer sun arrives, it's a sign that half of our waiting is over. So don't shy away, celebrate the summer. I certainly am. When this episode drops, I will be enjoying a lovely vacation on the island of Catalina. And when I wrote this episode, I was sitting on a beach while my adorable sons played in the sand and my lovely wife laid in the sun. But I do need to warn you to be careful, because if you get lost in your summer celebration, you might forget something important. Which totally happened to me, and leads us to our first segment, We Need a Little Christmas, now.
We need a little Christmas now.
So about a year ago, I told you about a fun new Christmas podcast called Festive Foreign Film Fans. If you followed my advice and became a listener, you heard part one of their anniversary episode a couple weeks ago. They did an award show for their show where they went through some of their favorite things that they've done over the past year of their show. If you listened, you will also have heard several messages of congratulations from other Christmas podcasters, including our boy Jerry from Totally Rad Christmas. What you definitely did not hear was me giving a congratulatory message. But you were supposed to. I told one of the hosts and friend of this show, Bob, that I would send him a message of congratulations on their one-year anniversary. But then I totally spaced out and did not send one. I want to make it clear, this was totally my fault and no one else's. But I was hoping to make up for that in some small way by wishing the guys a happy anniversary on this show. And also encouraging everyone to listen. It's a unique format in the Christmas podcast landscape. They explore different countries' Christmas traditions each episode through popular foreign holiday movies, offering insightful commentary and cultural tidbits. It's a really well-produced show, and Bob and Mark have great chemistry. Plus, because of the nature of foreign words sounding unfamiliar to people of different countries, they will sometimes mess up in the pronunciations of the words that they say, and if you've ever listened to the outtakes of this show, you know I can relate to that. So, give it a listen. I'll put a link in the show notes to their site. And congrats, Bobby and Mark, on 1 year of the Festive Foreign Film Fans. I hope there's a lot more Christmas goodness to come. And as long as we're talking about other Christmas podcasts, let's move on to our next segment, Five Golden Things.
Five Golden Things.
All year, I'm turning my countdown feature over to the other talented and merry hosts in the Christmas Podcast Network. Last time, we had Ken from the Sounds of Christmas podcast, and if you hadn't heard our May episode, I highly suggest checking it out. It's a musical wonderland of a top five list. But don't go anywhere just yet, because this month we are lucky to have Jeff from Lost Christmas, who has compiled a monster list for us, in more ways than one. Take it away, Jeff!
Hello, everybody. My name is Jeff, and I am the host of the Lost Christmas podcast. I absolutely love Christmas, and I am here to present my five golden things. My five golden things are the five golden monsters of Christmas time. So some of you might be saying, well, who invited this guy, and why is he talking about monsters? Well, I will tell you that folklore is incredibly important to the Christmas traditions that we all know and love, and Something that I really, really love is where some of these monsters came from and how they are active in our modern mythology and all of the current stories. And I just think monsters are super cool. So without much further ado, I'm going to get going with
number five,
the Calicanceroi. Singular is Calicanceros. So these are Greek or Anatolian creatures, and they live underground and come up to the surface during the 12 days of Christmas, give or take about a fortnight after the solstice. So basically for the 12 days of Christmas, you could say, or from like the 21st, 22nd through the beginning of January around Epiphany. And their origins could be either Turkish or Greek, just depending on where you're looking at it from the name perspective. If you're looking at the Greek form, then it's a form of like beautiful centaur. So really interesting concept to think about there. But if it's Turkish, then it lends itself more to a werewolf or a vampire kind of undead cursed creature, which is kind of cool to think about also as well. The dichotomy there is really, really fascinating. So what do they do? Why are they scary? Why are they so golden or wonderful? So what they do is they come up out of the ground around Christmas time, and they attempt to destroy the tree of life or the tree of earth. And they have only 12 days to do so. And to do that, they have to get all the branches from all over the world. So basically, they're dealing with the sun's cycle in the sky, trying to figure out, so the sun is hanging high in the sky or low in the sky, and so it's not moving as much. Anyway, so that's what they do. They don't have a standard appearance either, which to me lends itself more to the Turkish shapeshifter idea, whether it's a vampire or a werewolf or some sort of lycanthropy. And how do you defeat them? That's the important thing. So I'm going to give you guys some advice for these creatures. How do you defeat them? For these guys, you leave a colander out on your doorstep. That's one choice. You could also throw some donuts up onto your roof so that when they do pass by your house, they will eat the donuts and just keep moving. Or lastly, you can throw sausages up on your roof. I personally would stick with a colander on the front door or the front porch. That's just me personally. You do you. If you want to throw donuts or sausages up on your roof, go for it.
Number four
is Grilla or Gryla, depending on which pronunciation you're looking at. And she is a fascinating, super, super fun creature. So she is the queen of the trolls or ogres, depending on which way you're looking at it. And she is an Icelandic sorceress or an ogre mage. So if you're a Dungeons & Dragons fan, you might have heard of an ogre mage. Well, imagine Gryla is that. So that's a good way of looking at it. She's incredibly powerful, has tons of magic, can do all sorts of spells, and is also just like brutally strong physically. So really, really big. Sometimes she's depicted as like just a regular giant, so like 15 feet tall. Sometimes she's depicted in her human form, which is like just a woman, kind of like hideously ugly witch type character. And other times she is in her most monstrous form, which is... she has three heads with three eyes on each one and ears that droop way down to almost her hips. She also has 15 tails that she carries 15 sacks on them. And so what does she use those sacks for? Well, here's the fun part. She has room in each sack for 15 children. So yes, you counted that right. That is enough room for almost 3,400 kids for her on each trip. Lucky her. So she loves to cook them up, and she loves children. We'll just leave it at that. What else is horrible about Grilla or Gryla? Well, she has numerous children called the Yule Lads, and they are pretty terrible. They're more mischievous in a lot of ways, so they cause all sorts of mischief in Iceland and other parts of different Nordic regions, just depending on kind of which mythology you're following. But she also has a really cool house cat for her, but for us it'd be a monstrous cat. The thing is like as big as a school bus, and it's called the Yule Cat. Yeah, so... she's kind of this matron of evil and awful things and super, super, super gross. So she sniffs out bad kids, and you just thought Krampus was bad. Wait, and I hope you don't mess with Grilla. How do you avoid her? Keep your door locked and run away from Iceland. That would be my advice. There's no real positive. Usually, I think if you get new clothes for Christmas, she'll avoid your house. So I guess those underwear or socks that your mom and dad gave you, those are pretty useful in this case. So that's Grilla.
Number three.
Next, I'm going to pick up the pace a little bit, but this is Baba Yaga. So Baba Yaga, you probably have heard about in some sort of old story that, you know, your grandmother read or you had some old fairy tale book. So Baba Yaga is an old witch who lives in a forest, primarily Slavic in origin, but she lives in a house that stands on giant chicken legs. Yep, you heard that right. Giant chicken legs. It can walk around, which means she constantly keeps an eye on the things in the forest. So it's also harder to track her and hunt her down. She has a fence around her house that is made of human bones. Genuinely not really sure how this works, if she has a house that's on chicken legs, but I'm not here to, you know, like pick apart these stories. But the fence made of human bones, decorated with skulls, and like Grilla or Grella, she loves children. Just not in the way that Santa Claus does, right? So she's more of a consumer, we'll put it that way. So she loves to cook them up. She flies around on a giant mortar and pestle. So not a broomstick like you're thinking of with La Bafana, who's going to bring you presents. No. Baba Yaga, she rides around on a mortar and pestle. Yep, that's the thing that you grind spices with. That's exactly right. And that's how she hunts her prey, which can be children, could be animals, could be anybody who wanders into her territory. So her chief enemy at Christmas time is Grandfather Frost, or Djed Moroz, or Dead Moroz, and his granddaughter, Snegodochka, which means snow maiden. And they vanquish this vile witch with all sorts of their own magic. They have the power of snow and ice and the wind, and they can call down winter storms, and they can send her back to kind of like her home and send her scurrying away. So if you're needing some way to get rid of or to protect yourself from Baba Yaga, you want to keep the windows boarded up. You also want to not go into the forest alone. And if you see a candle lit in the forest, run away, because that is Baba Yaga's house. She puts candles on her fence to lure people in. So highly recommend avoiding that.
Number two.
Going to go with the Wendigo, which this is a North American monster. So this is a cannibalistic monster from North American, specifically Algonquin traditions. It's sometimes described as a giant creature up to 15 feet tall, so 4.5 meters. Or it can be a beast that gets larger the more that it consumes. And other traditions have it more of a like a zombie-like, so like an emaciated human with ashen flesh. Its kind of skin is just like disgusting and dry, and sometimes hairless, sometimes has hair that's like wispy and gross. But what you want to look out for is these guys have very sharp eyesight. They are the primal hunters, like the apex predators of the monster world. They can see in the dark. They can hear incredibly well. They have a sense of smell to rival any hunting dog or any animal, wolf, whatever. You'd better use silver weapons. So if you're coming at this, you better have some sort of silvered weapon, whether it's bullets or an arrow or a sword or knife, whatever it is. And if you're caught out in the cold, or you have performed some sort of greedy or selfish or isolationary act, then beware, because the curse of the Wendigo might be upon you. What does that mean exactly? Well, basically that means that you could turn into one, or you could be consumed by one. Just depends on how lucky you get. The best way to avoid the Wendigo is just to be a good person, right? So don't go doing greedy things. Don't go doing selfish acts. And don't isolate yourself. Christmas time should be a time to celebrate with other people. If you're feeling lonely, get around other people, right? Go to the mall, go to Starbucks, hang out. Text a friend you haven't seen in a while. So you want to avoid being a Wendigo. And there's all sorts of cool mystery around this. It has some vampire similarity, has some werewolf similarity, which you can see. But yeah, really, really cool, really, really terrifying. And the Algonquins are, they definitely talk about this even now in their modern mythology. It's a really, really cool and interesting number two monster.
Number one.
I'm going to cheat a little bit. This is a monster group. I am going to talk about my favorite all-time monster, not just from Christmas time, but from anything, and that is the Wild Hunt. Okay, so the Wild Hunt, which you may have heard if you've played the Witcher series, if you've read the books, heard the stories. So the Wild Hunt is of Danish, Norwegian, Swedish, Germanic. It could be Northern European, a little bit Western European, and Slavic. So has this really broad universal appeal and history. It's really interesting, too, because there's some similarities to the story of Tamlin, if you've heard that story from British Isles, but I won't get into that. You can listen to, I have an episode about the Wild Hunt if you're curious at all. But during the dark winter months, if you hear mysterious riding noises, galloping hooves, or if you see a fog roll in just a bit too fast for comfort, this could be the Wild Hunt, the undead riders of all sorts. Could be bandits, could be those captured, could be those who were lost in the battlefield, all sorts of things. But they're coming, and you'd better bar the doors and windows. Often, traditionally, led by Odin or Woden or Wotan, just depending on kind of where you're from. Generally, that's kind of the person that's leading it. Sometimes the devil, sometimes Sigurd, the dragon slayer. Could be biblical Cain from Cain and Abel. Could be Herod. I haven't seen that too much. That's more of a Christianization thing. Or it could be an angel Gabriel even, which is another super interesting. I'm guessing that's more of a positive Wild Hunt. But nonetheless, And in general, the Wild Hunt are out to plunder each unlocked house they come across. They will take all your things, Christmas gifts, all your food, and sometimes they'll even grab you and you'll have to join the Wild Hunt with them. So, really, really interesting. I love this. They also have hounds of the Wild Hunt. These are ghastly, ghostly dogs, usually pretty big, more like, if you're familiar with like wolves, like dire wolves, like very, very large wolves or very large dogs. Sometimes they're accompanied by fairies or elves or dwarves. Additionally, some nightmarish creatures from the darkest parts of this world and the next one. Just terrifying, this like haunting, cold, ice, darkness. It pervades and runs rampant throughout every community. If you are fortunate enough, you might see the female leader as well, which is Berkta or Berktold, also known as Hala or Holda. Just depends on kind of, again, where your regionality is. But they are the mistresses and maidens of the strongest fighters. Sometimes Odin, sometimes the devil, just depends. But they also sometimes lead the Wild Hunt on their own, depending on tradition. Other times they're riding and conquering alongside the other riders. But if you encounter the Wild Hunt, best advice, if you are ever so unlucky enough to encounter the Wild Hunt, I recommend being quiet as a mouse, locking the doors, hiding in a safe space, and then also if you drop any food from the table at Christmas dinner, leave it, because food that falls under the table is property of the Wild Hunt, and they will seek retribution if they don't get it. How do they know? Well, they just know. All right, that's my five golden monsters of Christmas time. If you were looking for Krampus, you are mistaken. Krampus comes from Krampus comes from the Santa Claus tradition. Anyway, so I got no need for that. I hope you guys have enjoyed this, and I'm looking forward to the Christmas time this year. Super excited for Tim in this podcast. Just absolutely wonderful. Be sure and check out all his backlog. Thanks.
Thank you, Jeff. That was the most I've enjoyed hearing about monsters since Grover was telling me about one at the end of a book. If you'd like to hear more of Jeff on his podcast, Lost Christmas, I've put a link to his show in the show notes of this episode. And now, let's move on to our featured segment today. We all love the festive decorations of Christmas, but there's one element of Christmas decor that has really divided people. Inflatable lawn decorations.
Myself because the roof was never scalable, but this year will be different. Yeah, I know what makes us hateable, but we just bought 2 dozen inflatables.
Some people love them, some people hate them, but make no mistake, they are an inescapable part of not just Christmas, but multiple holidays.
And I hate them. Bah humburst.
Who are you?
I'm Inflatinezer Scrooge, and I hate holiday inflatables.
Your name is Inflatinezer Scrooge.
That's right.
Hang on, let me just talk to Slappy the Elf in the production booth. Slappy, that seems like a real first draft of a name idea. We're really going with Inflatinezer Scrooge?
Actually, our first draft was Ebenezer Balloons, so this is way better. I would just roll with it.
Copy that. Okay, Inflatinezer. I'm going to change your Scroogey thoughts towards holiday inflatables by taking you through inflatables past, present, and future.
Bah humbust!
Oh, great. We're going to be repeating that as well? Fantastic. Well, let's go back to where it all began, with a turn-of-the-century fad.
The playwright party by the American Quartet, done for the Lambert Company of Chicago.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle all the way. All the funny jingle ride in one horse open sleigh.
No, 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 not that century. The turn of the last century.
Take me to the river. Drop me in the water.
If you're Gen Z or younger, you might not necessarily recognize that song, but the rest of us lived through it. That was the Big Mouth Billy Bass, an animatronic dancing fish that was somehow everywhere in the early 2000s, yet I don't know a single person who actually owned one. The company that made them was Gemmy Industries, and despite the fact that I never saw a soul purchase one, they were a big moneymaker for Gemmy. Until the fad died. Gemmy needed another idea to really grab consumers' attention, and they found inspiration in a very unlikely place.
Here's Cal Worthington and his dog Spot!
If you need a better car, go see Cal. For the best deal by far, go see Cal. If you need a car, truck, if you want to save a buck, if you want to change your luck, go see Cal.
Yes, according to Gemmy's Vice President of Product Development, Stephen Harris, Gemmy's co-owner, Dan Flattery, was inspired by local car dealerships. Quote, He was inspired by those giant inflatable gorillas that you see outside car dealerships. His idea was, how do you turn that into something that the residential consumer can decorate with? So, in 2001, Jemmy introduced their first inflatable holiday decoration, an 8-foot-tall Santa Claus. They had to really tinker with the design. Originally, they had to be inflated with a hairdryer, which could overheat and burn out. But eventually, Jemmy developed a fan that could run for months at a time. They even had to work with manufacturers to create a special coating because plain old polyester didn't inflate very well. According to the Jemmy Wiki, which is apparently a thing that exists, in the early years of production, Jemmy wanted to show consumers what an inflatable was, but feared that most stores would not have the room for an 8-foot-tall figure to be displayed. A store display was then released that would feature half of an air-blown figure fixed to a fan, which was then protected by a cardboard box. Despite being one of the main perks of an inflatable, these displays contained no lights whatsoever, and because their bases were made of cardboard, they could not be placed outdoors. Despite all this, the people started buying them. A lot of them. And they're constantly making upgrades. They have inflatables with lights, inflatables that play music, inflatables that animate, even smart inflatables that you can control with your phone. Jemmy said a few years ago that they account for 90 to 95% of the entire inflatables market. And that's gotta be good, because every year you see them on lawn after lawn. Sometimes there's so many on a single lawn, you wonder how the homeowners can reach the front door. Some of them are gigantic. They have 12-foot Santas, 15-foot reindeer, 26-foot snowmen. Some neighborhoods look like the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade took a wrong turn and stopped in the suburbs. And it's not just Christmas. There are Halloween inflatables, Valentine's Day inflatables, Thanksgiving, St. Patrick's Day. Pretty much if there's a holiday, you can find an inflatable for it. And in terms of Christmas choices, you're not just limited to Santa, reindeer, and snowmen. I have a Darth Vader wearing a Santa hat and holding a gigantic Death Star ornament that plays the Imperial March when it inflates. And that's just the tip of the inflated iceberg. You can get Mickey Mouse, the Grinch, Baby Yoda, Snoopy, the Minions. So many Minions. But with great success can come great backlash, and that's certainly true for inflatables.
Finally, we get to the part of this that I'm interested in.
Holy chestnuts! I forgot you were here.
I thought you were doing this whole thing for my benefit.
Right. And now we get to the present, and how inflatable haters like you, inflate-haters if you will...
Okay, you're going with inflator-hater, and you're going to make grief about inflator-laser?
That's fair. My point is that inflatables are often a target for Christmas vandalism.
2 at 6, a weekend attack on an inflatable reindeer decoration has led to a criminal investigation now and a serious message about a recent rise in holiday-related vandalism.
One could say the people who did this took the air out of Christmas for a Chesapeake veteran. They took knives to these blow-ups, and it's so much more than just these inflatables they ruined. It had the owner in tears.
I take a look at the Ring video. You can see an inflatable Santa lit up in someone's front yard before a young man walks up and look at that, throws a huge rock on him.
Okay, I'm not advocating vandalism. I'm just saying that they're tacky. You didn't actually decorate your house. You just plugged in a bag with a fan in it and that's it. Where's the care and attention to detail of stringing lights up in a tree with an eye for aesthetics?
I mean, some of us do both. The trees, bushes, and roof around my house are adorned with lights while the inflatables populate the yard.
And they're barely holiday-related. Paw Patrol, Shrek, Batman, none of these are Christmas-related. But you slap a Santa hat on them and suddenly it's a Christmas inflatable?
I mean, that's not limited to inflatables. I have a hooded sweatshirt with Captain America wearing a Santa hat that says I can Yule this all day.
And most people only turn them on at night, so during the day they all look sad and deflated on the ground like some sort of North Pole apocalypse.
And with that, let's move on to Christmas inflatable future.
Wait, so that was your whole attempt to change my feelings on them in the present?
If your inflatables are going to have a future, you need to care for them properly. So here are some tips for inflatable upkeep, which starts with how you initially set them up. Besides inflate-an-easer here, the greatest enemy of inflatables is wind. So you'll want to set them up somewhere flat, preferably with bushes or walls to block the wind. But also be mindful of where puddles form in your yard and avoid those spots. While most inflatables are designed to withstand some rain or snow, you definitely don't want to get them submerged in water. That's a lesson I learned the hard way with my most recent Mickey Mouse inflatable. R.I.P. Also, I don't really have this problem much in California, but if it deflates in rain or snow and the temperatures are near freezing, make sure it's fully thawed out before you try and inflate it again. Also, be sure to read the instructions, because most inflatables come with stakes or tethers. Be sure to secure your inflatable in place with those, as according to the instructions. You can also add bags of sand or gravel to weigh it down and thwart the archenemy, wind. Now, if you get a rip in your inflatable, you can patch it up with duct tape or clear, heavy-duty packing tape. and if you can apply the tape from inside the inflatable, it will be less noticeable. When the season is over and it's time to pack up your inflatable, you'll want to clean it first. Wipe it down with a damp cloth. If that's not quite enough, use a bit of mild dishwashing soap on the wet cloth and wipe it down with that. Then, wipe it down a second time with just a wet cloth to get the soap off. And be sure to let it fully dry before you deflate it and put it away. It's best to save the original packaging it came in, but if that's no longer an option, you can use a bin with a sealable lid. Make sure to put the instructions, owner's manual, all the bits and pieces, everything that came with it in the same bin that you're storing it with. And there we have it. I assume you are now all turned around on Christmas inflatables.
No, I still can't stand them. Bah humburst, I say.
But see, it's this negative attitude that leads to homeowners associations or cities trying to ban them, or for those vandalations we heard about earlier. Like, just because you don't like them, why do you have to rain on our Christmas parade? Like so many things people argue about, if it's not for you, don't do it. But also, don't worry about if other people do it. No one's going to make you put an inflatable on your yard. Why worry about your neighbor's yard?
I mean, I guess, live and let live and all that.
Boom! I'm claiming that as a win. The Christmas spirit comes through again. God bless us with begrudging acceptance, everyone.
Inflatable.
Yeah, I got one in my car.
Inflatable.
We are inflating so hard.
Inflatable.
There's like no room left.
Inflatable.
Inflatable AF. Yeah, you know what that means, right? Inflatable and festive. Come at me, dog!
Wait, wait, wait. Hold on a second. Do you hear what I hear? Yep, it's the return of Who Sang It Best. Every so often, we like to find two artists or groups who've done a recording of the same Christmas song and pit them against each other. It's all in good Christmas fun and really just gives us an excuse to listen to a little more Christmas music. This time, the song is Do You Hear What I Hear? And let's find out who will be performing it for us. In the red corner, we have multiple Grammy Award winners who were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 1996. It's Gladys Knight and the Pips!
Said the little lamb to the shepherd boy, do you hear what I hear?
Hear what I hear.
Ringing through the night, shepherd boy.
In the green corner, a lady who scored 7 consecutive number one hits and holds the Guinness World Record as the most awarded female artist of all time. It's Whitney Houston!
A song, high above the tree with a voice as big as
head on over to CantWaitForChristmasPod.com to hear full versions of the songs and cast your vote. Then tune into our July episode to learn who sang it best. And that's our show. But speaking of our July episode, that's going to be our 9-year anniversary listener feedback special. So be sure and email in your ideas for the show. Like, if you have a Need a Little Christmas Now tip, please share it so I can read it on the show. Or if you have questions you want to ask, I'm going to open up the listener email bag and answer them. So send your stuff in to christmas@tancast.com. That's Christmas at tan, like the color, cast, like you broke your arm, .com. Do it now. Trust me, I know how bad it feels to wait too long and miss somebody's anniversary episode. Speaking of which, be sure to click the link in the show notes and hear the 1-year anniversary episode of the Festive Foreign Film Fans. Part 1 came out a few weeks ago, and Part 2 drops the same day as this episode drops. And on the subject of other Christmas podcasts, another huge thank you, a monstrously huge thank you, if you will, and I will, to Jeff from Lost Christmas for joining us for 5 golden things today. You can find the link to the Lost Christmas podcast in the show notes of this episode as well. So you've got plenty of great Christmas content in store for you until the next episode. All right, I'm headed back out to the beach, but I'll see you in July for our anniversary episode. And until then, Yule Believers, keep laughing all the way.
And that was Christmas 1983.
Actually, Dad, it's 2024.
Oh.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Can't Wait for Christmas podcast. If you like what you hear, please subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. Remember, if you leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, aka iTunes, and email us about it at christmas@tancast.com, we'll send you a free Can't Wait for Christmas sticker. If you'd like to see the show notes or leave a comment on this or any other episodes, you can go to our official website, cantwaitforchristmaspod.com. While you're there, you'll find a link to our official Zazzle store, where you can grab customizable t-shirts, ornaments, stickers, and all sorts of other Christmas-themed items all year long. We'd love to connect with you on social media. On TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and Threads, we are Can't Wait for Christmas Pod. And on the app formerly known as Twitter, we are @ChristmasPod. We Wish You a Merry Christmas was performed by the United States Marine Corps Band, and this amazing version of Jingle Bells on the accordion was performed by the wonderful and talented Christian Nowicki. All other music and sounds used in this episode are the properties of their individual copyright holders, and they are used for purposes of commentary and review. No infringement is intended. Okay, boys, did I forget anything?
God bless us, everyone.
Merry Christmas!
So, give it a listen. I'll put a link to the show in the show notes. What? I'll put a link in the show notes to their site. Oh, I'll put a link in the show notes to their site. I guess I could say it that way. I'll put a link in the show notes to their site. I don't like it. Tim of the past, who wrote this on the beach, you are getting too relaxed and I don't like your sentence structure. They have inflatables with lights, inflatables that play music, inflatables that animate, inflatables. They're like inflatables, but you put them on a plate.
And they're barely holiday related. Paw Patrol, Shrek, Batman, none of these are Christmas related, but you slap a Santa hat on it and suddenly it's a Christmas inflatable?
I think I may have lost the English accent somewhere in there. Let me try that again. Now, if you get a rip in your inflatable, you can patch it with duct tape or clear heavy-duty packing. If you get a rip in your hosting duties, you can patch it with some other host who is better than me.
In the red corner, we have multiple Grammy Award winners who were inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
I would love for an actual fight announcer to lose his mind in the middle of a mess up like that.
In the green corner, a lady who scored 7 consecutive number one hits and holds the Guinness World Record as one of the...
Nope, not one of. Why would... You wouldn't hold the Guinness Book of Records as one of the most.
I'm a world record. I'm near the top. No, the world record means you got the record, baby.
Head on over to cantwaitforchristmaspod.com to hear a full... when will you mess up on such an easy word? Like, I can understand when I mess up on hard words, but head on over to here? That's not hard. Work, mouth, work!